Hare Krishna. So I want to thank you very much for yesterday, where I could see you were very much participating. Yesterday we had the first part of our counseling seminar. We discussed how it is important for us as counselors or as devotees to stand tall in the face of whatever the world brings to us, good things and things which are opportunities for us to grow. We introduced to you a very nice, I think, or very, let us say, clear and comprehensible model, the Tree of Life, where we said that a person needs to be sure that he is active in three areas of his life. And I think you all remember, first we start with what? The roots, our spiritual roots. Then the tree trunk, what does that stand for? The lifestyle. What is the lifestyle composed of? Yes, Preeti? Yes, the emotional and physical sides and needs of our life. And then the last aspect of the Tree of Life was what? Crown. And what does that stand for? Yeah, our contribution to others' lives. Yes. So we also did yesterday several exercises, and I was so happy with one group. When we asked the group to brainstorm what they would like to cultivate, they said, well, we will do all the three. We will walk, and they started to walk out in the foggy, in the dark. Then we will do spiritual things. We will make a kirtan. Then we heard a thundering explosion of different types of percussion instruments first, and then sweet singing was a kirtan. And then they decided to pick flowers for Krishna. And I don't see them because we are in the winter, but at least they made that very good decision. By the way, there are first-class flowers. They are called in German Schneeglöckchen or snowbells. They are in that direction. And then they decided to serve prasadam, I believe, or something to do with others. I would like to recommend you, while you are here on the retreat, and we only have today and part of tomorrow, to remember doing things in your Tree of Life. And, it's now the chance to become, how do you say, accustomed is a good word, to a very nice spiritual life leadership, how you lead your life. I think that's a new word, but why not make up new words? Life leadership, no? How you take your life in your own hands and try to practice the Tree of Life while you're still here. I think you all did some resting. That was for the physical cultivation, but I'm always, this is my constant critique of the Pandava Senas. You can't send them really to bed. They are very active. Today now, we will go into a totally different area of the Tree of Life. And therefore, we call this work, it's about counseling. We called this workbook The Tree of Life in Spiritual Counseling. There are other books planned, or not just books, other areas where you can apply the tree of life. I hope that there will be a time when we bring out a book, The Tree of Life in Football, you know, for a wide English audience who are into... You can apply this simple system because it's so natural in all areas of life. But we will now focus entirely on spiritual counseling. May I ask you a question just to check if you understand the concept? Where would you place counseling in the tree of life? Crown. Only in the crown? It can also be in the emotional part, you know, serving others. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, even physical cultivation and mental cultivation is a service attitude. But it is obviously mostly in the crown of the tree. Now to enter into the art of... Wow, is this your... My God, have you... Wonderful. This is a piece of art. It has gold dust in it. Really, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I feel humbled because I'm certainly there would be better ones to give this garland to, like Naveen Krishna, and so on. But thank you. I have to shape up now. Say the right things, you know, with such a garland. Hare Krishna. I feel we should start with putting a motivational foundation into our hearts. Why do we want to counsel? Is it that we want to counsel people and help them because we want to expand? Is it that we want to counsel because it gives us as mentors a personal kick? This is an English word also. That we are appreciated by others. If you want to counsel, you need to ask yourself what would be the right motivation. And the right motivation, I will not talk about this in depth here, is obviously compassion. Compassion is such a important spiritual quality to develop that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about this and said it's the main Dharma for the Vaishnavas. If I could refer you to page 19 of your workbook, and you could kindly read with me. Towards the lower end of the page. Sri Krishna is very quickly satisfied with persons who have compassion towards all others and do not cause them any pain and anxieties. Daya, this is a Sanskrit word, or compassion, is the foremost quality of the Vaishnavas. Daya is their main dharma. This is a quotation from which I just found before the book was printed in Jaiva Dharma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur places this one quality so high on the throne of qualities, from where it rules over all qualities, compassion, compassionate care. If you wish to practice compassion, which is a foundational principle of your spiritual life, you might learn another quality which we will learn. You know, there is a soul of compassion, and this is called empathy. Empathy means, and I will talk about it a little later. It means to think how others feel. You know, when you in the name of compassion, you could make a huge mistake. That is, you could go to a person and compassionately give them something which increases their misery. I would like to give you an example, something which I did wrong. In my family clan, an extended family, there were always new arrivals, that means people who were born new, and I was sometimes asked to take care of the babies, babysitting in other words, because I had a modest reputation of being able to show children how to walk. Today we have a mother's meeting and I will give you the secret how your child can walk and run around in a way that you can almost register him for the Olympiadic Games. It's such a good method. So I became famous for this, and soon I had to babysit quite a lot. Hare Krishna, me and babysitting. But so I remember there was one child who was crying, and I thought, well, I have to solve the dilemma of this child. And I thought, what do I like when I am sad? And I liked cookies very much. So I took from my cookies, they were extremely dry and crunchy cookies. I took a cookie and just put it into the mouth of the child. But the child cried more. It didn't like the cookie. But I thought cookie is the best misery dispeller. And I put the cookie down in the mouth and it cried even more until the crying became so loud that the mother, who was 10,000 light years away, heard it and came and said, what are you doing? By the sound of the cry, you can understand. He wants juice or milk or something juicy, something wet, you know. But you are putting a dry cookie in a throat. This is where I highly... What was my mistake? I had tried to be compassionate on my terms. I had tried to help the person in what I thought would be good for the person. I had not practiced what is called empathy, that is, feeling how the child felt. And therefore, with all my good intentions, I increased the suffering of the child or the misery of the child. No, this is what we do as mentors or as counselors or as people who want to help. We sometimes do it. So compassion is really something which requires that you think first, what does the other person need? Otherwise, your compassion is something like subtle violence. It can become like this. This compassion, my dear devotees, is something so absolutely important that I would like to give you some quotation from the scriptures. There is a very nice section on this in the Bhagavatam. It describes the instructions of Kapila to his father Kadama. Kadama Muni had been a yogi meditating in the forest, and then the Lord came to him, appeared to him and said, I want to appear as your son, and for that I request you to enter the Grihastha ashram. I have made already all the arrangements. So next day, the yogi, who was really in a remote part of the forest, heard a procession making its way through the underwood. And as he looked, he saw Svayambhuva Manu and his daughter Devaki approaching him. And he knew they had been inspired by the Lord and directed by the Lord where to find him. And He understood this is the Lord's desire, so he agreed when Svayambhuva Manu said, please marry my daughter Devahuti. I said Devaki? Devahuti is her name. Devahuti. So the marriage was commenced, and after first some daughters were born, and then Kapila Dev appeared to the couple. And Venkatadama Muni saw his illustrious son, you know, with a huge effulgence and with lotus eyes. He was extremely happy, but after some time he decided to leave his home. He decided to leave his home not because he wanted to avoid his wife or his son. He decided to leave his home because he knew that the eyes of the world, even the eyes of the devotees in the Buckland retreat, would be on him to see if he would follow and serve the Lord by serving the mission of the Lord. The Lord wanted to show how to live an ideal life and how to go through the different ashrams. So he left his home and took vanaprastha in pursuance of the Lord's instructions that each human being should go through different phases in his life and evolve. But before he left home, he asked his son, who was God, can you please give me an advice how I can please you? And then the Lord said, you should show compassion to all living entities. Then you will attain self-realization. Just notice the causality here. If you are compassionate towards others, it's good for you. You will attain self-realization. Do you want to read this? Then please go to page 20 in your workbook. It's in the first paragraph, in the middle. It's printed in cursive letters. So let us start again. You should show compassion to all living entities. Then you will attain self-realization. And then he says what it means to show compassion. You should give assurance of safety to all. I didn't give an assurance of safety to that little child when I stuffed down the cookie. You should give assurance of safety to all. And by doing so, you will perceive your own self as well as all the universes in me and myself in you. This is maybe a little enigmatic for you, but what it means is you will see that you are a part of Krishna and everything and everyone else is a part of Krishna. Let me speak it in simple English language. When you are compassionate, my dear devotees, you will feel how you lift it out of your self-referred little world. You will see everyone as being part of Krishna. You will join, in other words, a universal family of Vasudeva Kutumbika. No? You will realize we all belong together. We are all part of Krishna. And you will prosper in your self-realization like this. Prabhupada has elaborated in the purport what this means. Such a devotee who wants to show compassion gives an assurance of safety to all. He says, let us live in Krishna consciousness and conquer the nations of material existence. And later he adds, the devotees should show mercy to the fallen souls and also give them assurance of fearlessness. As soon as one becomes a devotee of the Lord, he is convinced that he is protected by the Lord. Fear itself is afraid of the Lord. Therefore, what has he to do with fearfulness? My dear devotees, we live in the world of fear. Vrindavan Bihari. Kuntaloka. There's always anxieties which surround us. And when you want to counsel, you just need to help people become free from anxieties, really. Free from insecurities, which are also a modern word for an anxiety, you know, and give them assurance everything is all right, you know, and then people will be able to follow their path in their life. They will, first of all, recognize their path when they are out of this constant insecurity and fearfulness and kunta, and they will be able to progress. Much has been said about compassion, and I will not speak about this any further, but I would like to give you three steps which will help you to become compassionate. If you're so kind to look in your workbook at page 22, meditate or think about the fact that all living beings are equal. You know, when they come to you for counseling, that's a very musical phone. When they come, you see them not as man, not as woman, not as high, not as low, not as the queen or as the slave, you know. Slave, we don't have slaves, servant. You see them as souls, as part and parcels of Krishna. You see them with an equal eye. That's the best way to see them, because all the other things are just coverings or just roles or designations which we have. Then the second thing is, I got this from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is to understand that the experience of misery is the same for everyone. All experience misery in the same way as you do. You know, when it's cold for you, it will be cold for them. Maybe because you have eaten a little bit more chilies, you experience the cold a little later, you know. But cold is cold. Misery, to have lost a loved one, or to be maybe misunderstood and given given bad names or rumors, is the same for you as for others. So you can in this way understand that we experience misery in the same way. And miseries can, when they are too strong, create a stumbling block in someone's progressive evolvement. When someone has too much miseries, I think you know this, they only think about what? The misery. Everything may be all right, but if you have stepped in Vrindavan on a thorn, you only think about that little piece, which is maybe 1/10 of a millimeter where the thorn has entered. Your whole consciousness shrinks into the misery. That's why that's why there are lower planetary systems where misery is inflicted upon living entities. Because before a living entity would be able to enter into an animal form, after he has a human form of life, his consciousness needs to first of all shrink. And that is affected by misery. Therefore, there are these lower planetary systems with pain which is inflicted upon others. Pain or misery, when it is too big, can just restrict all and everything of your consciousness to one spot, and you can't progress and see beyond that any longer. Have you seen that in counseling? How people who, and Pandavasena is very often, I remember heartbreak was there, you know, when people who were once hoping to be a team, when they separated, either, you know, equal gender team or mixed gender team, a couple or pair, heartbreak, and then they just could not go on and sometimes did leave our Sangha. And you will say, but there are so many wonderful things to think about. Krishna, the spiritual world, Vrindavan, and just look at you. I just can see the break in the heart. Have you noticed that? This is what misery does. So you have to understand when someone is suffering, it's a problem for them, and it's a block for them in their evolution. And you should do something compassionately to understand that on their terms, for how it feels for them, and what would be the solution for them, and then you can compassionately take the third step, which is, if you want to eradicate misery, you will need to make a determined effort and take concrete measures. I really recommend to you, I will give you a few guidelines how to see what could be wrong and how to help. There's a very nice checking table which I will introduce you to a little later. But first of all, you need to. So I will try to solve this situation. I will help them, because that person has to go on in his life, and you have to make very concrete measures. What I recommend you is, you say to the person, see, we are now in this together. I will be with you. I will help you to solve this. Please make me, and then you have to enter the second stage, which I will talk about a little later. But you have to assure the person, we are now a team. We are going to solve this. We are going to solve this together, you know. Say the word together, maybe 5 times, so that they understand, wow, I'm not alone. And then I have to do something very concrete, and you have to check on whether that worked or not for the person. I always say, come back after 1 month, when I'm giving them a difficult thing to do, or after a week, tell me how it go, and we will review how it went, and we will review the thing. This is a compassionate exercise, a compassionate thing. 3 steps. Can you, without looking, give me the 3 steps of showing compassion? First step? Yes, we are all in this together. We are connected. Yes. The second. Yes, my God, it's like a prayer, like in the church, you say. And then? Third step. You must do concrete steps. Someone said, it must be concrete, not just I love you or nice, you know. Okay, we are going to take this on now. Concrete steps. We looked a little in the internet. I want to do now a compassionate exercise with you, where you will be asked to do a meditation on compassion. I know Pandavasena meditation. careful. The young boys and girls will fall asleep, but don't worry. We will do this a very nice one. Our musical band is ready. Yes. Would you like to go through this compassionate exercise? Okay, sit tall. How do you sit tall? You just imagine something pulls you up. Chairs is perfectly all right. When we say sit tall, we want the spine to sit erect. Yes, we will not be able to address the little children in this exercise. So, I request you to become mindful of your in and outgoing breath. Just feel how the air enters your nostrils. And then when you... Oh, we will do it the Pandavasena way. Just lift your arms like this. Breathe in. Energy. Breathe out. I know you. You don't want to meditate. You want energy. This does the same thing. It just brings your mind into a different space, but it does it the Pandavasena way. We want to breathe in deep and exhale totally. Yep. When you are up, you have your fingers, you spread your fingers. You really want to create some traction. You know this word, traction? Some. You're not breathing. Krishna Ketan smiles with appreciation because I have hit on the nerve of the time. If you start to sweat, that's very good. No, honestly. Five more. And last one. If you are a lady, no, if you're a man, please place your left hand over your navel and the right hand over your left hand. And if you're a lady, place your right hand under your navel. I said over the navel, that's wrong, under the navel, and the left hand over the right hand. And just feel into your body. Maybe you feel a little bit a tingle in the shoulders. Maybe sweat has arrived. Concentrate on your in and outgoing breath. And kindly get ready for your second round of Bhastrika Pranayam. On an inhale, we go up. You will very soon see for what this is good. Please trust me for just a few more minutes and then we will get very serious. You want to bring your mind to your inhale and your exhale. Just be a little conscious of what you're doing. If you are a heart patient with a heart pacemaker, you should stop at this stage. If you're not, continue. Yes, Siam, you can imagine your hands are a little bit pulled to the back so that there's more happening in your shoulders. Five more. 3, 4, 5. Please place the hand back like you've learned and just observe. Maybe you feel in your head some type of energy. This was shown to me by an Ayurvedic doctor, and he said it's the quickest way to bring a person into a space where he can contemplate deep things. I request you for a moment, just a moment, to be aware of the misery which goes on in this world. There's birth, old age, disease and death. So many births are taking place. Some of them are auspicious, others maybe a little difficult. There's old age in this world, old people who cannot walk, who cannot talk, who are not really cared for. They're put into old age homes and no one ever cares to visit them. Some don't have medical supply the way they need it. And then there's disease, even for little children. Some of these diseases are extremely painful, excruciatingly painful. So painful that people wish they could die, but they can't yet. Then there's death, birth, old age, disease, and death. People die in very difficult circumstances. The heart is full of anxiety and regret. Anxiety is because they don't know where they will go to, what will happen now. And regret because they may have not used their time at all in a good way, and now their time is up. The great Prahlad Maharaj prayed for all of them. He prayed the compassion prayer. And I request you to listen to the prayer, and then we will do a little kirtan. Svastyastu Vishvasya Kala Prasidatam Jayantu Bhutani Shivam Mitodiya Manaschabatram Bhajatata Dokshaye Aveshyatam No Mati Apyahaituki. Prahlad said, may there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all the living entities become calm by practicing bhakti yoga. For by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Shri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in Him. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Oh. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just in your mind's eye, contemplate for a moment on the misery of the living entities in this world and in this time, and just dedicate this kirtan for them. Just think that this sound vibration will go out from this Buckland Hall and reach out to all the people who need help. It's a compassionate kirtan. Sing please now. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Please sing again. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Jaya Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
This is very, very important to think about the welfare of others. And by the way, it will help us to nuke or destroy our worstest enemy, which is the ego, which always makes us in our thoughts so limited that we only think about our own little world. If you want to be free from misery, help others to become free from misery, then yours will evaporate. And you will not even know it was there. This is really a very powerful practice, which has in all spiritual traditions been given a prime place of importance. Even in impersonalistic traditions like Buddhism, compassion is a very, very important project. In Islam, the pious Muslim is advised to do something for the welfare of other beings. In Christianity, help your neighbor, you know. In Krishna consciousness or in spirit, in our Vedic tradition, Daya, the art of showing compassion, is even said to be the foremost, the emperor of all Vaishnava qualities. It's the Vaishnava Dharma to do this. Jiva Daya, is Mahaprabhu expressed it like this. He expected his followers to practice Nam Ruchi, Vaishnav Seva, and then Jiva Daya, compassion to others. It's so important. Have you done something today only for yourself, or have you done an act for others? Pious Hindus are like this. Your mothers and fathers have maybe shown you. They give food even to the birds in the winter, no? Have you seen them before? They have something like an external window silk. You know, it's not inside in your, but outside. And I sometimes saw this, and they put bread there, and then people come. I want to introduce this in where we stay. It's on the lake. There are some swans, and we feed them. Our devotees. I saw this. They put food in the there, and then everyone can come, because we feel we live here, we have such a warm house, but what is with all the others outside freezing? When will this winter ever end? You know, this is the song of the swans. You know, we should do something. And it will help you to get out of your stinky little mind. Hare Krishna. Sorry, sometimes some words of power need to be spoken. But couple this with empathy. You know, see what others need, not what you need. Otherwise, it's not compassion. Couple this with empathy. I want to refer to you to read about empathy and the miracle of empathy on page 25 of your workbook. Huh? Do this in your private reading time. There is something so wonderfully described, a story from a very, very, very brutal war, and how empathy worked a miracle there. And if you want to learn to show compassion, pray this prayer which we have sung on page 27. It's the compassion prayer by the young saint Prahlad Maharaj. Huh? All right, this is something for you to do. Two simple tasks, especially if you chant this Svasya Stuvishvasya Kala Prasidatam, it will open your heart to the art of compassion. So, enough of theory. We want to now go practical, boys and girls. The art of giving spiritual direction is a wonderful art, and I would like to introduce you to this. I would like to first of all attack a misconception. What spiritual direction or counseling, you can say, I'm using these two words, what is the English word? I interchange these two words. They're the same thing. Counseling or giving spiritual direction. What is it? Spiritual counseling or spiritual direction. It's mostly helping people to connect with the source of all power and all solutions. That is God. Spiritual direction is different from psychotherapy or psychological counseling, where you mainly focus in psychology on the problem which is immediately before your eyes and which the mentee or the counselee has stated to you. Spiritual direction goes much, much deeper. Let me explain, and this is very important that you intellectually grasp this concept. When a person breaks away or breaks out of his relationship with Krishna, problems are bound to come because he will enter the material world, the relative world of change. Today is good, tomorrow it is bad. Today is happiness, tomorrow is sadness. It's a dual world, it's in constant flux. So it's bound to happen to everyone. The solution is to get out of the dualistic world, the world of change, and connect spiritually with the Lord again. It's almost like this. Imagine there is a branch with has flowers. When the branch breaks off the tree, at that time, problems appear to the flowers. They become wilted, they fall away, eventually they even decompose. So psychology would deal with the flowers. Oh, my dear flower, a little water on you, you know, maybe a little flower cream on the flower. Obviously not cream, but some nutrients would be put there. Spiritual direction means to place the branch back on the tree, you know, make some... There are some things you can do with leaves and then they can grow again on the tree. In spiritual counseling, this must be our goal. We want to reconnect people with the source of life, with the source of solutions, with the source of our power. So we want to offer what you could say help for self-help. This is very important. Otherwise, we get lost in the millions of problems. And you will never solve anything. It will come again. A problem will come again. And then you have solved this. Again a problem comes. The problems come just like waves come to the beach of an ocean. You must solve the main problem, or the causal problem, which is people have fallen out of their relationship to Krishna. There may be times when you have to refer a mentee or counselor to psychotherapy. And I want to tell, this is like when someone has panic attacks maybe, or suffers from severe cases of schizophrenia and such things. I would encourage you to not deal with this yourself, because for that you need some training. And you can, you know, if you enter the complex world of the mind, you can do something which is more harmful than good than it is in this department. But the normal things which we deal with in a counseling situation are not panic attacks or severe neurosis. I mean, in Kali Yuga, everyone is a little bit neurotic, but and a little panic. But this is not a disease. This is something which comes and goes like a bad wind comes and goes. You know, it's not something taken so serious. What we do is we try to see a solution. You know, we try to find solutions which include God consciousness. Psychotherapy often is atheistic. Do you know? The founding father, Sigmund, got it all wrong. You know, Sigmund Freud, he didn't get it all wrong. He had some very good, some very, let us say, profound insights, but his conclusions were not good. Always. He was an atheist, and that's why two of his main students, Viktor Frankl and Carl Gustav Jung, broke away from him. He was just so much against God. He had some psychological problem with God. Hare Krishna. This is at least from our devotee perspective, we can see it like this. We are not doing that. We are not dealing with wilted flowers, but with broken branches. Huh? And by this method, the mind, the disturbed mind, gets all right. This is thought. Now, I would like to go into a little mentor training. Because you want to help people establish a relationship and find spiritual solutions or God-conscious solutions, you need first of all to be a little bit more God-conscious. I like this program, mentorship program, for many reasons. The first and foremost is that finally we become a community of care. But another thing is it helps the mentors to become serious devotees. I have written down on page 29 a few things which can help you to become more strong in your own relationship with the Supreme before you give that to others. It is get to know Krishna better by informing yourself regularly about him. Read more in the Srimad Bhagavatam. My dear devotees, to everyone where I have given this tip, including birth-giving mothers who really usually don't think of reading the Srimad Bhagavatam when they give birth. You know, I mean, I'm not saying when you give birth you should read, you know, you should concentrate on what you're doing, you know. not that, but I'm thinking before this, you know, read and inform yourself. Remember our Nilamani, who gave such a wonderful little speech yesterday on how she felt as a mother when she was very, very busy with the innumerable needs of small children, and how she felt, now I have to stop something, even though I have no time. I will go back to the Shastras and study Bhakti Shastra. Remember what she said? And how it helped her, and how I think the whole family was profiting from this. You know, this reading in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is more than a book. It's the Lord who has come in the age of Kali in the form of literature. You would be the greatest of ignoramus, and ignoramus, if you would ignore that. Second, cleanse the mirror of your heart more by attentive and affectionate chanting, so that the Lord can reveal himself in the looking glass of the heart. When you are wanting to be a mentor, be spiritually strong, and then you will like to give advices. Then you will draw from an inexhaustible source of spiritual strength and inspiration. Something which I feel is very important for mentor is my third point on page 30. Open your mind and confidence to a trusted devotee of the Lord and obtain yourself good counsel. This is sometimes a problem which mentors face or older devotees face. They are giving so much, but they forget that they also need good association and good inspiration and good advices. Have a peer association, my dear mentors. Have inspiring association with others. Very important. And finally, I would like to refer you to a very powerful source of inspiration, which is not so much known in our lives. It's study the inspiring lives and examples of the saintly and try to follow in their footsteps. There's so much to be gained by studying the lives of Haridas Thakur. There's so much to be gained by studying the inspiring examples of saintly people. You know, I even, and here is something which I must say, I had a turn of my whole life when I became aware of this, and I like to study now the lives of saintly people and hear how they solve problems, what were their secrets, and follow their examples. This is something very powerful for mentors to do. Is it all right for you, or am I going too fast? I want to cover some ground here because we really want to get into the practical aspects. But maybe there's one or two questions at this moment. Let me also look at the... Oh yeah, we are all right. We're doing all right. Yes, Sahilji. And I saw then our devotee. Please tell me your good name, the new father. Yes. Rasa Bihari Krishna Prabhu. Yes, Sahil, please ask your question. Yes. Very good. This is a... this is... Sahil, I'm so grateful to this question. And I think we all have been in situations like Sahil describes. You see someone is suffering, but because you really have not gone through this yourself, you don't really know how to solve it and how to address it. And how will you practice empathy in such a thing? Sahil, this is such a profound question. I remember. It was many, many years ago, and the Pandavasenas came to Goloka, to Singhachalam. That's a farm where we worship Lord Nrsingadev in south of Germany. And it was maybe my second time with the Pandava Senas. And at that time, Pandava Sena didn't have a mentorship program. So all the problems which were there were brought to us, you know, to us older devotees. And I remember I had this group of young boys first, and something was not right in the group. And I tried to, do you look tense in your life? And, you know, they had all enigmatic hairstyles, you know, and were all in this, you know, how do I appear, you know. I didn't really know what was wrong because they didn't tell me. Then came all the young Mataji group, like 20 young boiling Matajis, you know. And you know, then one person said, the boys are so bad. One Mataji says so bad. And all the other Matajis went. The boys never understand us. They will never understand us. All the others. And then one girl started to cry and everyone started to cry. Really profound crying, not just little crying. You know, it was like the end of the world. I clearly didn't understand where was the problem. And, you know, then I asked, and it was all about they don't love us, and, you know, and we never will get one of, and it was all, you know, teenage Matajis, immature, not like now you all of you are grown up people, at least by age. You're very joyful this morning. I'm speaking about the existential human condition and you just laugh. And I really could not understand why this was such a problem. And I thought, well, look, you are now, what are you, 17 to 18 years. This is, you know, I remember I had read a lot of psychology before I came. This is normal, you know. You will, everyone marries, you know. Every pot gets lit, you know. This is how the world is, you know. Don't think so dramatically about it. It is something very easy, you know. And I advised from my point of view because I just couldn't understand that there was a problem. And then... Then I remember one scene. I had invited a young boy to go on a walk and to talk on the walk. And the boy revealed his problem, same category of problem. I was going already like, why don't they understand? It's just so simple. It's just normal growing pains in young boys and girls, and they just... have detected that they are different from the other gender, and they are all mixed up and all over the place. If we come into place, and I was just going and giving my Swami advices and my Swami advices, and I noticed there was silence on the other side of my, you know, we started our walk with two, and there was no sound, nothing. Then after, maybe I'm not very clear, then I cited verses from the Shastra. And all of a sudden I heard profound sobbing. I looked at the boy. The boy looked at me. And then it broke out, and I thought it was so beautiful what he said. Maharaj, you don't understand me. It was so profound advice, you know, because that was a situation. I had never been in this situation, and I, Maharaj, what you say, with all respect, I am here, and what you say is here. It just flows over me. I can't relate to it. It's a great pain in my heart, and you don't understand. In fact, I feel when I talk to you, with all your advices, you are only increasing my pain. The boy was serious. He was not a bad boy. He was a good boy. So he said all this, and I said, really? Then just let us sit down. And we sat down, and now you explain to me, but make me see what I don't see at the moment. And this boy, very temperamental boy, good, well educated, he helped me see through his eyes. So when you can't understand what is the problem, you have, and if you want to take, you have to sit the person down, and you have to now try to see through his eyes, Sahil. This is not easy. You know, you can imagine that someone comes with a magical wand, touches your heart, Sahil, and now you are turned into a little child. Sometimes they have this in movies, you know. I don't know, in movies. I know in Krishna Leela, Kamsa comes to Vrindavan and wants to, you know, he has tried to destroy Krishna by sending different demons, but they all came, they were all killed by Krishna. So Kamsa says, I take things into my own hand. And then he comes to Vrindavan, and as he comes to the border of Vrindavan, he meets Purnamasi, and Purnamasi, a great, grand old lady of Vrindavan, says, where do you want to go? It's not your business, says Kamsa. You sinful wretch. You will never be able to enter Vrindavan unless you become a small gopi. And Purnamasi calls the little girls, gopis, and they take Kamsa and throw him into an irrigation ditch. Kamsa comes crawling out of the irrigation ditch. A frog is on his head, some algae, and he's in the body of a small little girl. Now you learn to make cow dung paddies. And he is becoming a cow dung paddy gopi. It gets so intolerably humiliating for him that finally he runs out of Vrindavan, all covered with cow dung, and vows to never try to enter Vrindavan again. So this is a little illustration of he had to come into the form of a gopi. Maybe it's a little bit different here, but you can imagine that you are changing into the person and see things from their life. It's an interesting experience in perception. And you know what, Sahil? The other person will help you if they find out you are interested to find out. They will tell you all what they feel, the things, how they see it, and so on. I just did this a few weeks ago. I talked to a teenager. I mean, the person was a little I don't want to say exactly what it is. I talked to a teenager, and the teenager, I began to understand. It was very important how others thought about the person, very important peer thing is all, that's all about teenagers are all about my friends and how do they like me and how do I appear and how do they think of me and so on, because they are still on their way to find their authentic self, you know. So That is all I can say about empathy. The Red Indians have something on this. I think I must have written it down somewhere. Yes, the Native Americans say, if you want to know me, walk one day in my moccasins. Go where I go. See what I see. Talk with the people I talk to. And then you will know about my life. I think if Srila Prabhupada would not have done this with us, we would not be here, Sahil. If he would not have understood us. I remember there was one, after some time of teaching in the West, Prabhupada saw we were not doing so well as a movement, and then he gave a lecture. My dear boys and girls of America, I think you all should get married. He said like this, that he thought this would help people to stabilize themselves a little bit more, because most had come from the hippie background where they were irresponsible and just a little lost in their lives. Syam Bihari, isn't it? Also nice, yes. Yes. Yeah. Does happiness see, when I talked about misery and why it's necessary that we remove misery from people's life, I talked only about half of what misery does. Sometimes people who go through intense suffering finally detach from their world. And I just... I have seen this myself. When I was diagnosed cancer, it was the greatest gift of God, because all my designations and mentals fell away from me. I felt very relieved. Okay, now I have to prepare for eternity. I can't any longer mingle with these roles and with the... So, but mostly misery constricts. But some severe miseries is good. Happiness can be the same. Happiness does not always broaden the consciousness. Not always. Sometimes people become very selfish when they become happy. You can see the materialists are not really served by their happiness. They become often very selfish. But I think if a devotee is relatively happy, it's good for him, because he is a spiritual person, and he feels, oh, now I'm, oh, it's all right, now I can do service, you know. This usually the now an animal, usually there is an automatic process, you know. You go from lower up. This is the evolutionary plan which is there in the universe. So automatically the consciousness broadens. It's not necessarily by happiness that there needs to be a happy dog to become a good human being, you know, and so on. It is something like a paternoster. You know paternoster? It is maybe in England you have these. It is like they go... Anyways, it's all right. We don't have to look for the word. I would like to go now to the qualities which a spiritual mentor needs to have. I've made it very simple. First, there was trustworthiness. There was our Chaitanya Leela is here. She was asking a question about this. Let me just look around. What helps you as a mentor to become trustworthy? Do you remember? Without looking into your working book. Mickey says, by example you become trustworthy. What do you have to create with the mentee if you want to have a good exchange? This is a little bit more difficult, I acknowledge. A holding context. Sahil, could you explain to the group what is a holding context? Because this is a very important... Do you all recognize it's a very important atmosphere which is created in that relationship so that people are willing to open and have also trust and enthusiasm to follow your advice. What is a holding context? Anyone? No, Sahil, you are Sahil gladly gives the question to others. Not all at once, please. A holding context which you establish between a mentor, a mentee, and yourself is an atmosphere where trust is there in the heart of the mentee. Deep, abiding trust that this person can help me. And this feeling is a, we can compare this feeling with a feeling of safety. The person feels safe in your association to talk about it. You have to create something like a harbor, a virtual harbor, or no, virtual is what happens in the computer. Let me say an invisible harbor, you know, where boats can be safe from the high waves. That is what you have to do. And that is really when a mentee sees this person has a good character and also has good intentions. They can feel that. He has an intention to help and he is trustworthy and able to help. A holding context, you can note this down because it's not in your working book. You can write it down on page number 30. You know, there is trustworthiness and, you know, essential quality, holding context. It is done by example. You have to give an example. You have to show that you have a good intention. The person has to see that, or this person wants to help. He comes from a good motivation. He will not laugh at me or punish me. He has to... also, you have to somehow show that you know something. You know solutions. I would say some knowledge you need to show, because otherwise why would someone trust you? These are qualities which help you. And you know, human society needs that. Those of you who have studied a little bit the Catholic Church, they know about confession. Do you know what that is? There is a... How do you call this little booth where the priest is sitting? Confession booth. No? So there's someone whose heart is heavy, so heavy, and he comes to a priest and he sits there and he just hears what the other person tells him. He cannot be seen by the other person. Nor can he necessarily see the other person. In some confession booth, you can see, because it's very dark inside when you sit, and you outside it's light, so you see the face and something of the other person, but the other person can't see the priest. And then they all lay the person lays his misery out, and the priest hears it, and he then gives some solution to the person. And it is said this simple thing, this simple institution, has saved the Christian Church from extinction, because people could relieve their heart and get advices. This is possible because the Church has given the holding context. You know, he's a priest, he's a man of God, and therefore he's automatically, without any investigation, trusted. But people will investigate you. They will find out, can I trust this person? And therefore you do have to create you have to appear as being trustworthy. You can also, if you don't like the word holding context because it's new, you can say you must actually become trustworthy and also exhibit trustworthiness. No? When they see you, that you walk your talk, they will trust you. If you want to read more about this quality, it's there on page 30. I want to go to another, the second quality, and then we are almost at the end. Let me just ask something before I go. I will ask in a few minutes Naveen Krishna Prabhu to talk about the proper inner attitude of a spiritual mentor, and I will give him a significant amount of time, 15 minutes, so that he can really address us, because I really have seen in Naveen Krishna some very good qualities, and I'm myself interested to hear. But I want to just go quickly with you through these three qualifications. You must be accessible. With accessible, I mean two things. First of all, the physical accessibility, the telephone, you know, or the address must be clear. It's just, you know, we have this problem in Gaurabhavan. We have no telephone, you know, and we get crazy and people get crazy. They can't get us. And when they phone my trusted team, often their phones are switched off because they're helplessly overwhelmed with other services. And you know, so you must be accessible. If you feel, I don't want to be accessible all day and all night, and I can understand it, give times when people can phone you, maybe between 4 o'clock and 6 o'clock. That is good. Give some time. You must be accessible. Sometimes, you know, we have this, what do you expect when you want to contact a Hare Krishna temple? There was an investigation made in Germany. And you know what came out? On first place was, no one picks up the phone. It's not good. You know, you cannot contact a person or a group. So you must be physically accessible. That's the first thing. I'm the guest of Deepak and our Priti Mataji, and they have amazing, stunning phones, you know, where you can always reach them. If this line doesn't work, then there's another line, and they switch in miraculous ways the lines, and you can always phone even if someone is on one phone, no problem, then you have another line. It's like the you are at the edge of the world. You know, you almost feel you are close to San Francisco. Maybe this is not possible for all of us, but some type of accessible. But the other, which I consider more important, is people must be able to connect with you. Pradyumna Prabhu from Leicester once said something. He said, everyone knows to communicate, few know how to connect. You need to be able to be accessible mentally. People need to be able to reach you. There are a few things, you know, like I have this nature when someone talks to me, and it's something which I and I have so much to do, then I sometimes start the beginning of a new letter. I'm still a person who writes handwritten letters, believe it or not. And I do something, and all of a sudden I notice the person who talks to me stop. Oh, sorry. You know, I showed unattending listening behavior. Is that the word? Inattentive listening behavior. The person has the feeling. What would you do if someone, if you talk to someone and he starts his martial arts training, you know, just on the side? You would feel, should we make another time? You know, you must be accessible inside, you know, mentally as a person. You must give your attention. You must show the person, I care for your voice. I hear it. That type of accessible. And that means also you must first understand the person before you start advising. Have you sometimes been in this situation? You have asked a very profound question in a lecture in our temples, and the person on the lecture seat, you can already feel he's boiling with enthusiasm to answer you, and you know he has not, you have not even said your question, you have just said the prelude for your question, but he's already ready to go, you know, and you know he and then he already starts, and then you say, please let me finish, Prabhu, I have not come to the core of my question. Okay, finish you know, and you go like, oh, is this the right person to ask my question? You're like, have you noted that I'm putting it a little exaggerated, you know, and you, as a mentor, you have to be accessible. You can't do that. You have to first understand. Maybe you have to ask the question. What did you mean? Or why is this? Okay, can you help me to see like you see? That is my favorite sentence as a counselor. You know, first, can you please? I can't just see your point, and so on. And then only you can answer. Accessibility. The last one, oh my God, everything. Oh, Krishna. Willingness to help. I will make it very brief here. You need to show that you are actually there to help. Mentorship is really, you should not think, oh, I'm too humble, I will not say anything. But the people should show, see that you are taking their case seriousness. This willingness to help is there. People want your correction. They want your input. Don't feel shy to give it. They came for that. They took that they made this phone call and did this journey just because of that. So don't think that now I will not give the item. You have to give the advice, but only after you have created trustworthiness and two types of accessibility. One is just they have to get to you, and the second is they have to get to you. You know, they have to have the feeling that there is a connection. And then understand you will, they want your help and give that help. Ah, Krishna, finished. Now I want to ask our Navin Krishna to come here. Please arrange a microphone for him. He will tell us a little bit about the inner attitudes which we require.
If you want, you can come closer to me. Thank you so much.
Yeah, then you are. We are a team.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so I thought this was going to be 3 minutes rather than 15. So, Bhanu Nandini Mati did
ask. No, we have a little bit more time.
She did ask me to say something, so I was thinking I'm probably the worst person to ask on this because I have a kind of a trick that I played with the mentorship system to make my life a lot easier, and that was that I pick my mentees very carefully. Pick the ones who don't need any help. Pick the ones who are more senior to you, and it all becomes very easy. I mean, we were having this conversation. I was having a conversation with Michael yesterday. He was talking about the sometimes it's hard to find peer association. You know, there's senior association and there's junior association, which is sometimes easier. And I was thinking that actually sometimes we have this categorization of junior, peer, and senior, but usually most of the people that we hang around with, it's much more of a grayscale than it is a kind of just three clear categories. And most of the people that we interact with are much more our peers than they are junior, senior, in a very clear, direct way. I think there are, and I think that's important for us to note, just because in the way that we interact and deal with each other, particularly with mentees, you know, certainly, you know, I was thinking through when Marge kind of was asking to speak about this, I was thinking through my mentees one by one. And there's different ways in which you can judge seniority. Like in Shastra, it talks about spiritual realization or time of initiation or age, etc. So there's different ways you can do it. I mean, there's one way in which I'm senior to all of them, and that's by age. But in different respects, each of those mentees are much more senior to me in, you know, in different regards. And I think that's important to recognize in terms of how we deal with mentees, because I think we should be careful about in the way which we're advising, stroke, instructing. When I think about the group here, for example, you know, there's a clear distinction between, you know, senior and junior, right? Between all of us and Maharaj. Between us, however, there's much less differentiation. And that needs to be reflected in how we interact with each other. Sometimes we see mentors being very keen to give lectures and kind of less keen to attend them. And so it's, you know, somebody. So I mean, there's points around how we temper that. I was just asking Maharaj actually just before I spoke, the examples that Maharaj gives on page 33. And 34, really, really fantastic two pages here. Maharaj talks about self-delusion, the trap of self-delusion on page 33, and he gives a brilliant example of how if you're the pujari in a temple and about to perform the arati, and if the pujari is deluded into thinking that all of these people in the temple have come to see me. whereas in fact, of course, you know, his job is to open the curtain so that those people can see Krishna. And in a similar way, the mentor's function is to be able to empower their mentees to be able to see Krishna and not kind of, you know, be the person who gets in the way. Prabhupada gives the example of you know, spectacles. I mean, the idea that it's transparent, it doesn't get in the way. And Bhanu Nandini Machadi gave the example of that that's true of pujaris, but it's also true if somebody wants to sing kirtan. If somebody thinks that people are coming here to hear me sing kirtan, it's the wrong idea. And it's true of people, you know, when we're giving talks or lectures or advice to mentees. So I think just in terms of where we put ourselves on that, you know, on that process is important. And the other thing I was reflecting on was that when somebody asks me for advice, most of my reflections back to them are based on mistakes that I've made. So, you know, I made a bunch of mistakes, I learned from those mistakes, and then somebody's asking me for some advice and I'm reflecting back those mistakes. And it's kind of a humbling experience because you realize that, well, you know, it makes you remember that we're not better than anyone. It's just that I'm older and I've made more mistakes than that person. And so, you know, it's important to recognize that we shouldn't become judgmental in that. If, you know, at the end of the day, we've all gone through stuff. At least in my case, gone through stuff which is much worse than the person who's asking me advice for. So those are some things. I think just to finish off, we're talking about listening and being empathetic. Marge spoke about that. And just to add a little bit on that is this idea of creating it in this holding context, this idea of making the other person feel that they can ask anything and not be judged upon it. And that comes through trust, obviously, and over time. But if it is made clear up front, explicitly, then that helps, I think. And lastly, something that Shuddhidharma Prabhu told me when I first became chairman of Pandasena, so that was like in 94, and it's kind of it really stuck with me because I found it very. At that moment, it was like a light bulb moment for me. He said to me, don't ever ask anyone to do anything that you're not prepared to do yourself. And that was with regards to kind of, you know, either giving advice or telling people to do service or whatever it was. And again, I think it's important when we're giving advice that we're, you know, in some respects, we are forced to reflect upon what we're doing ourselves in our lives, and how much we can therefore advise people to do something else. So I think, the examples that Maharaj gives on these two pages are really important, and they reflect upon this kind of key principle of just being real, as Maharaj spoke about yesterday, that we have to be honest in terms of where we're at, and I think the person that you're speaking to has to also feel that this person is not just speaking like theory, but they're speaking from, you know, something that's genuinely, something that they're really feeling genuinely in their heart, and they're able to share that. I think that's it.
Thank you. Very good, very good. It's fitting very nicely. I want to end the session now with a little demonstration. For this, I require glasses which are not luxury glasses, like this is a reading glass. But does someone have substantial glasses, which he needs to wear all day and all night? Not all night. Thick glasses? What is your for? Is it strong or is it? Is that strong? Good. Is it not strong? Who has strong glasses? You have. I don't. Yes, please come. I will not do anything which you will regret later in your life. I need now a person who doesn't wear glasses. Thank you. Can you find your yeah.
I'm sorry. Who would Nimai, would you be comfortable to come? I will not do anything which you will regret later in your life. Would you mind to sit here? Please don't be afraid. I'm very cultured. I come from a good family. I want to now make a little demonstration on how important it is to be emphatic and see things the way a person sees. Nima, I would like you to put these glasses on. leave them. Tell me honestly, what is your? How do you see things now? It's all right. Nima, please keep. I will. Really, there will be no harm to you. And Nima, you say it's blurry everything. Please try harder. See a little bit. You know, there are clear people there. And everything is very crystal clear. Just, you know, try harder. Give your best. Do you see better now? Nimai, I'm a big authority. I'm a Swami, and I'm asking you to now see very clearly the world. Can you see better now? I will try another, Nimai. Nimai, if you don't see the things now, the way I want you to see it, you know, clear, distinctive personalities, you're showing a disregard to the seminar, and you show a disregard to my authority, and even you show a great, great, great arrogance towards all these people. You say they look blurry. This is maybe the worst offense. So can you see now? Can you see them clearly? Nima, I think I will now apply some social pressure here. Everyone sees clearly. Everyone sees clearly. It's a good pair of glasses. It is bought in a London shop. Every one of us would be happy if you could see things the way we see, crystal clear. Do you see better now, Nimai? Doesn't work. I thank you very much, Nimai. I don't want to make you uncomfortable. You can give the glasses back. Let us pay an applause to Nimai. I tried very hard to make Nimai see through these glasses, which were not his eyes, which were not his way of seeing. And he saw, you know, he touched my heart so much when he said, no. My God. I thought, Nimai, you understood it was play acting. I was not, I was not getting on your case. But, you know, in real life, counselors do this. You know, can't you see this, you know? Like I said to the young boy who was next to me walking through the German forest, it's so obvious to see. This is a post-teenager trauma which you are suffering from. You know, this doesn't help. It is violent even. When I tried to act to Nima, I thought, I can't do this. Nima is so, how do you say, such a good heart, how can you intimidate such a boy, you know? So, but we often do this when we give advice. Therefore, we need to learn to respect a person's, what is the English word, dioptrie? What? The way they see, is it dioptrie? You know this? perspective. Yes, we need to see a person's perspective, and we need to create as mentors a holding or trust, an atmosphere where trust reigns, and then the person will be willing and encouraged to share his perspective so that we can solve them. Every one of us has their own glasses and can't see through the glasses of someone else. It's very important. I wanted to just show this. I'm not such a so good in this. Was the point clear? It's moving in a way, isn't it? We see our mistakes. And thank you, Nima, and you were really. I hope I didn't intimidate you or something. It was all. Yeah, good. I thought, my God, I'm making a Vaishnav offense here. All right, my dear devotees, we are little, only 7 minutes over time. That is nothing. I want to thank you very, very much for attending this this part of the seminar. There is, let me see, there is some orientation which we require. Can we give a microphone?
Hare Krishna. As you have seen, we have now covered a lot of from the book, and Maharaj has really given us the first principles to many, many points. And I just want to give you a little summary or an overview. Maharaj started to speak on compassion as one of the prerequisites to really help others. So we're not helping for our own sake, that others give us positive feedbacks, how well we can speak or how much knowledge we have, but we really, or any other motivation which we might have when we want to help others, but we should really help others because of compassion. And we did a wonderful exercise, if you remember, and Maharaj also told us that it's very, very good to practice compassion daily. And we could pray the prayer of Prahlad Maharaj. And what we would like you to do in your break with your partner is just please reflect upon this point of compassion, how you understood it, and just try to see ways in which you could practice them. I don't know if you like the exercise of envisioning the suffering of others and then singing kirtan. Maybe you feel inspired and you want to sing every evening 5 or 10 minutes kirtan and really offer it for all souls in this world who are suffering. Maybe, you know, it's just think about any practice which you could implement in your life so that you can really practice compassion and that the consciousness expands in that sense. That would be the first exercise, reflecting exercise. Then the second one, Maharaj also said page 25 to 27, there are descriptions on empathy, so it will be very, very nice if you can read that in your free time. Maybe you want to read even with your partner, and then you just want to go through it and discuss how you understand it. And then the third is the third exercise is the three qualifications of a mentor, and it will be very, very nice if also with your partner you can just reflect on this. Because we really, if you see, Maharaj has covered a lot. And when we all sit here, we all feel, wow, this is amazing, I understand, and yes. But if we don't reflect now, we will maybe forget all the points. And it's also maybe good to write things down if you feel like this. And yes, especially because tomorrow we will again remind you kindly to write some reflection paper. You can write a paper, A4 paper, or you can make a drawing of what you have learned here, what really touched you, so that you can give it to your mentors later on and you can discuss this. Because as Krishna Kirtan Prabhu said, this seminar which we are having here with Maharaj is just an overview of the Tree of Life, but it's really a lifelong or year-long practice which mentors would be encouraged to practice with the mentees and so on. So much for this. And also, please don't forget the Tree of Life. Yesterday, we were speaking a lot about the Tree of Life.
They were so good, yes.
Yes, and Maharaj also suggested that we practice together the three areas by chanting japa, by being present in kirtans, having sadhu sangha. Then for the trunk, we could take walks together, and for the crown of the tree, take care of your partner, ask him how he's doing, and so on, or just maybe do some service, so that it stays with us, what we learned yesterday, that we don't forget everything and now we are just focusing on today. So much from our side. And I think, Buddha Bhavana Prabhu, you have some announcements to do. Hare Krishna. And yes, we see each other again at 3 o'clock.